Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Brought to you by Lexus. Some things do more than their stated functions, because exceptional things inspire you to do exceptional things. To this select list, we add the all-new Lexus GX. With its exceptional capability, you'll see possibilities you never knew existed, sending you far outside your comfort zone. But as much as the GX challenges you, it also spoils you. Its intuitive technology and luxurious features mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to it. The all-new Lexus GX.
This is The Guardian.
I had to go about it, write it out, and find it myself. And there's some stories I can tell you.
Welcome to The Final Word Ashes Daily. I'm Emma John, and along with many cricket followers here in the UK, I woke up this morning just in time to hear that Australia had declared, leaving England a whopping 468-run target to win the second test. Lucky for both me and you, my colleagues Adam Collins and Jeff Lemon in Adelaide did not sleep through the majority of Australia's innings, so you'll be able to get some prime thoughts on that from them in a short while. In the meantime, let's just consider Nathan Lyon, shall we? 406 test wickets, nearly a quarter of those English ones. It says a lot about our selective memories that the unforgettable moment England fans have allotted him in Ashes history is a fumbled catch to miss a run out at Headingley. Not that Lyon himself probably cares. He'll just carry on torturing English batsmen for kicks if it's all the same to you. His overs just after the dinner interval seemed to put Rory Burns under some kind of hypnosis. The ball bucked and weaved in the liminal airspace around Burns's bat, and the England opener was paralysed in place, incapable of making a break to the safety of the other end. Not that that would have offered much of an escape, given that Mitchell Starc was tormenting David Malan in similar fashion. Still, it was a mystery how Lyon's deliveries kept missing the edge. It was Malan who finally gave up his, only for Steve Smith to immediately drop it at slip. Not that Smith's mistake mattered, Malan was LBW next over to Michael Neeser. Lyon's opening over to Joe Root, meanwhile, was a beauty, which made a mockery of the England captain's attempts to sweep. Australia's spinner finished the day without a wicket, but you can only suspect he'll make up for that tomorrow. As for Root, you just wonder what more this series can put him through. In the practice session before play, a ball had hit him in what we euphemistically call the lower abdomen, leaving him unable to lead his team onto the field. Now, facing Starc in the dark, just 15 minutes before the close of play, he took another hit in exactly the same spot and fell to the ground like a man who'd been gut shot. Having compounded his injury, Starc added the final insult by stealing his edge with the last ball of the day. England will be cast into day 5 on the tiny ice floe of 82/4, their hopes of making anything from this test now far beyond the horizon. And with that, let's head over to Adam and Jeff in Adelaide.
Day 4, night 4 at the Adelaide Oval, and it's not that England are in trouble. I mean, they're in trouble like an aeroplane with three engines gone and one remaining is in trouble. The landing, the miracle on the Hudson is probably not going to happen. But given that a lot of England supporters have suffered through this test match and this podcast, I think we should start today by looking at a bit that went well for England.
Okay.
A moment, more than a moment, this morning, this afternoon, which I still think of as this morning, when things were good. It wasn't when Joe Root got hit in the unmentionables while warming up and had to spend 2 hours off the field with an ice pack on his regions. But it was when suddenly, out of nowhere, they were ripping through wickets. I mean, the way that Jimmy Anderson bowls an absolute beauty to go through the night watchman early, always good to do that. Then Stuart Broad with an unplayable to nick off Marcus Harris, who doesn't necessarily need an unplayable, but got one. And then it should have been Steve Smith caught first ball, golden duck. He doesn't make a lot of golden ducks. He made one last summer against India, and it was a pretty rare thing in his career. But Butler, having taken the previous catch off Harris, puts down the one off Smith. But then Robinson gets Smith for six. So, I mean, they were flying for a little while in the England in that early session, and it was like, okay, here is the thing that England's bowlers can do.
Yeah, well, they took 3 for 14 from 14 overs to start the day. because they had the ball moving around. They were pitching it up more. It kind of reinforced that point that Jeff, you made on night one, that they went to plan B too quickly, and that plan A isn't a bad plan when you've got bowlers of the quality of Anderson and Broad leading the attack, and Robinson, whose reputation has been enhanced in a couple of different ways today. We'll come to one a little bit later, I'm sure. But yeah, Smith should have been out first ball. Butler's had a very odd test match. He's taken a blinder to get rid of Harris, well, twice in both innings. He took an excellent catch today to get rid of Smith as well off Robinson. But between times, he's let a number go through his hands, including Smith first ball. And then Broad has a straight up and down, looked like he was plumb shout for leg before second ball, reprieved on umpire's call. I am certain that Rod Tucker would have viewed the appeal more kindly had not Broad been celebrating at backward point when he turned around after Rod was shaking his head. The celeb appeal can backfire on you sometimes as well, and I think it might have done exactly that today with Rod Tucker not taking any of that trash. I love Stuart Broad, of course, and I love that he's made this a thing, but you know, Law 42 does need some updating, as we've talked about on the Final Word weekly show in the past. And yeah, then the second hour, Travis Head, who so far in the series looks the man most likely to dominate the thing. A century at Brisbane, a better than breezy half century today. He hit the ball superbly, especially off the back foot, which is a great sign in Australia. If you can pull and cut well, you are. And I know it's his home ground, and I get it's a drop in pitch, not a lot of speed in the pitch at that point either, but still, it takes some doing. The way he played Ben Stokes, for example, was of the highest class, and there with Marnus Labuschagne, who played and missed 100 times again, as he did in the first innings, but he's going through one of those patches right now in Test cricket when he seemingly can't get out. But yes, that partnership meant that Australia were able to sort of do as they pleased in the middle session, and so it went. But yeah, I think that to England's credit, they didn't rock up this morning and let the declaration bowling become precisely that initially. That first hour or so is a bit of a template for the future.
It was something, you know. It was there was life in that moment, and I wonder if. I mean, okay, the LBW, I understand why it was given not out, because Smith moves across his stumps so drastically that he was way outside his off stump half a second after the ball had struck his pad. So it's hard to read those as hitting in line. I do think that umpire's call in terms of impact is nonsense. It's either hitting you in line or not hitting you in line. I don't see why there needs to be a grey area there, and that should be concrete. But I wondered if the catch that went down, like, sure, they got him for six, and it was only a few overs later, but it was quite a few overs later because Smith was there for a little while going slowly. I just wonder whether that, had they got him first ball, that might have been enough to keep them rolling through the Australians. But as it was, you know, they started to run into that wall, that Marnus-shaped wall. He was one off 40-odd deliveries at one point, not interested in scoring at the start, and gradually built into his innings. But it was one of those. It is still a declaration innings where all you need is for someone to get a 50, someone else to get a 30, you know, and you've pretty much got enough runs because you're getting yourself 400 in head. In the end, they were sort of closer to ended up closer to 500 ahead. So I just thought if they'd got him first ball, maybe they could have just kept rocking through them and really stunned the Australians and got them out for something much less than 200.
Yeah, there was room for one twist today, I reckon, and it required England to bowl out Australia for 120 or fewer. And if Smith goes first ball, that's a distant but vague possibility, albeit acknowledging how well that Head played, and I suppose he would have had a decent chance to stop the rot along with Labuschagne anyway. But yeah, it needed that sense of momentum, I suppose, and that was out the window after the LB went the wrong way for them, and the drop catch from Butler, which again, you know, I feel as though, you know, again, we are Butler sympathisers, apologists even sometimes on this show. Well, I know I certainly have been, and I feel like there is room for Joss Butler at test level, but it felt to me like they made a call about him and the gloves like 3 years ago. When he came back into the test team, Bairstow was preferred. They went away to Sri Lanka and the Windies, and Folks was preferred. At different points, it's been either of those two men given the opportunity with Butler playing as a specialist bat, I feel as though that's probably a better fit for him rather than asking him to wear the gloves in Australia, 150 overs in the dirt across 2 days, a couple of chances go down, a 17 ball duck. I mean, you know, a lot's going wrong for him. And now they need him tomorrow at number seven to potentially bat for a number of hours because, look, Joe Root's not there. And let's go from one extreme to the other in terms of the day's play to the last ball of it. Mitchell Starc around the wicket, tailing away. How often have we seen that, Jeff, with either the white or the pink ball? Perhaps not so much with the red ball, but white ball and pink ball over the journey. That angle he was able to generate and steer it away to get Root at the last possible moment to close out the day. I think Mark Howard was it who called it a hammer blow on television, and that's kind of spot on, really, because that's how it felt. If Root and Stokes, the leadership axis, are going into the final day, I think you're allowed to dream a little bit. If you're an England fan, you're permitted to dream a little bit. You're allowed to speculate about, well, if these two are in at lunch, as Root and Malan were in at lunch, or dinner rather, on day two, day three, make that, you can start to sort of sketch a course to victory, or not victory, sorry, to the draw in a similar way to what South Africa were able to do on this ground 9 years ago, or perhaps the better comparison might be what India were able to achieve across 131 overs at Sydney just in January. Like you could transfer pressure back onto bowlers who remember that chasing experience at Sydney and a couple of long partnerships, and suddenly you're sort of in a position where you can dead bat the game away late. But it required Root to bat for sort of 5 or 6 or 7 hours because we just know how fragile this team is. And now the probability of that goes through the floor. And I think that it's more likely that England, much as it was 4 years ago here when they came back four down on the fifth day, will probably be done by dinner.
Five down, I think, by that point. But
right.
Yeah, it'd be... You would think it was possible to dream about batting out the four sessions in a situation where Australia's best two quicks were missing, Mitchell Starc and Tyre, and you've got a couple of new-ish guys, newish in Richardson and new in Nisa. But that's just not how it worked because it was Richardson and Nisa who got the incisions. It was Jai Richardson who bowled pretty well, took some tap, went at about four runs and over in the first innings, even though he bowled okay. He bowled very attackingly and did go for runs. But he picks up the first wicket in this innings. Haseeb Hameed worked him out with a beautiful delivery that came in a bit, decked away a bit, edged to Carey behind. And then it's Nisa who gets Darwin Malan when, you know, he's been the only other point of resistance. He bats pretty well, faces 50-odd deliveries. He's out there for, quite a decent slab of time, but then gets pinned just in line with the stumps, the left-hander. So he's leg before wicket. And then it's Rory Burns getting his only real start, I suppose. He gets to 34, doesn't look very fluent, but he's still there. And then it's Richardson again who moves one away from him, away from the left-hander this time, and gets the edge into the slip. So they were the key. You know, they got those three and kept working through them, and then that allowed Starc to knock over Root late in the day. Ended up being the last ball of the day at 82 for four.
Yeah, and a word for Nathan Lyon in all of that as well. He has Malan dropped by Steve Smith. Probably the easiest chance that Smith's had through the series after pouching five of them off the seamers. But that goes down, and in the next over, Nisa goes around the wicket and blows Malan's pad off. I just thought that was excellent bowling. Nisa was going across Malan trying to find the outside edge. But the change of angle, they put in a short mid wicket. I was on the call at the time, and you can kind of see the plan come to fruition. It was a beautiful thing. And exactly the same thing happened about an hour later, maybe not even an hour. Maybe half an hour later, when Burns was facing up to Richardson. Now, Richardson bowled a stellar delivery, a stellar first spell, but that delivery to Haseeb Hameed took his glove off pretty much, bounced so much after hitting the seam. That appreciable movement we talk about with Richardson away from the right-hander, it was all there. It was glorious stuff. So that's sort of plan A for him with the new ball. But to come back with his second spell to Rory Burns, who, for all of the pitfalls and all of the challenges for him at the moment, did face the second most number of balls in the 2019 Ashes. And I raise that to remind people that he does know this Australian attack fairly well, and he can bat for a long stretch of time, and that's precisely what England were trying to do. Like, he can be an annoyance and bat for a whole day. So with that in mind, with a ball that wasn't old but was no longer new, for Richardson to realise, look, I'm going to go around the wicket here and try and angle it off the seam and to bowl three beautiful deliveries in that over, and the third one to find the edge. I mean, that's the stuff you dream of as a fast bowler. And Richardson, after going wicketless in the first innings, to take two high-quality wickets in the second, I think that'll mean that The conversation we'll probably have tomorrow, Jeff, will revolve around if Cummins returns to the team as expected and if Hazelwood misses, as we kind of think he might. If there's only room for one bowler, then tomorrow could be a bit of a bowl-off, and Richardson has got the leg up because of how well he bowled in his two opportunities this evening to get Australia going and to get rid of players at, when they looked, you know, or Hamid was out for a duck. But with Burns, he could have been a real problem tomorrow.
I suppose the argument for Nisa might be just how economical he's been as well. He's barely given away a run where Richardson has at times. And maybe if you've got Stark going through for the third test at Melbourne as well, you'd rather have a more economical option alongside him to let him attack.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
More. Let's look at the one thing that isn't going right for Australia, because Cameron Green made a few runs today as well. But Marcus Harris, if we look at Rory Burns, you wouldn't say that Rory Burns is having a good series. I don't think anybody would necessarily make that mistake. He's still ahead of Marcus Harris on runs. They're 51-38. Not flattering figures either, but Rory Burns is having a nightmare series and Marcus Harris is still going worse than him. It would be a flex for the Australian team to go to the third test and just keep picking him anyway, because it doesn't matter because they're that far ahead. But he's got one of the worst records in the history of Test cricket for someone who's opened in as many innings as he has. He doesn't look like he knows how to make a run against quality bowling. And Usman Khawaja is a player who's had plenty of opportunities and has underperformed against his ability over the broad sweep of his career. But I can't see how you can look at this team right now today and say that Usman Khawaja is not a better player than Marcus Harris.
I think I share that view, but I would suspect that they'll be reluctant to, this is very Australian thinking, change your winning team. Assuming they complete the job tomorrow, I don't think they'll want any discombobulation in the group. And I know 4 years ago they made a change after winning at Adelaide and being 2-0 up and removed Peter Hanscom in favour of Mitchell Marsh, which at the time felt like, not premature, but that felt like a flex as well. Let's pick the guy in form who can bowl a bit at home, and it paid off big time. But even though Khawaja is very much part of this squad. We saw him celebrating Nisa's first wicket. We saw him dancing in front of the Barmy Army tonight. He's part of this team, part of this squad. But I just don't see it happening. If it were me, I would look at making the change. Look, Harris is unlucky to the extent to which he got a very good ball today, and Butler's dragged in two wonderful catches off him while dropping chances off Smith and Labuschagne, which were 10 times
feel
easier.
Pretty hard done by it. On that score, you'd feel fairly out of luck.
Yeah, and I don't think we're quite into Joe Burns' territory from 12 months ago. I know Joe Burns made 50 here, but he looked so out of sorts at Melbourne that it felt like it was almost, they were doing him a favour by getting rid of him. I don't sort of see Harris in quite the same way. He batted in quite an enterprising fashion last night, by the way. So, I'm not quite sold on the idea that he's completely stuffed. But, there'll be a weight of runs argument that'll start pretty quickly. He might get one more chance. Remember, he'll be going to the MCG, home test match for him since moving to WA. The MCG is a ground where he's made loads of runs, so that might be tempting as well. But, it's a bit of a watch this space when that's the only spot in the team, because Head's consolidated his position. Warner's never getting dropped, nor is Smith, nor is Labuschagne, and nor is Green when he's able to bowl and field the way he is at the moment. And useful runs for him today. They were junk time runs, and he didn't score a boundary. He was able to ease 33 unbeaten runs without moving out of third gear, and that might just be what he needs to get himself into the series with the bat as well.
The final word, Hall of Fame is about the most final word moment of the day, which is not necessarily the best, but just the one that stood out to us. Did anything leap out at you like a salmon swimming upstream today, Adam?
Doesn't it have to be the new Colin Miller, the new Funky Miller in the form of Ollie Robinson, and not only reverting from seam up to off spin, but doing it bloody well and looking like he's got a genuine future as a dual threat. And I'm not even joking. I mean, like, it's easy to take the piss out of this kind of thing. I mean, David Malan took his first two test wickets today. Joe Root picked up two wickets. Four of the five to go to make that four of the nine to go were from effectively part-time spin. And that's not a great reflection on where England are at in terms of their team balance, not having a frontline spinner playing at the moment. But with all of that said, Ollie Robinson bowling in the Speed Dealers and getting plenty of bounce and looking the part as a finger spinner in the tradition of Graham Swann or Ashley Giles or Nathan Lyon, I definitely see a world where this guy bowls more off spin in the future. And the fact that it took this to bring it on, because Joe Root was off the ground because he'd been smashed in the nuts in practice before they were ready to take the field today, makes it all the better for mine. So maybe it's one of those unintended consequences of a pretty unfortunate thing for Joe Root, which got all the more unfortunate when he was whacked there again before getting out late today. But yes, Ollie Robinson, medium pace slash off spin, that's the future, I think.
And I think the wear an outlet that doesn't necessarily, like most others, put, say, 8 minutes worth of laughing into someone getting hit in the nuts, because it's a very unpleasant thing. But it did seem symbolic for England's tour that not only their best player, but in many ways their only player, couldn't come on the ground after. Like how many more mishaps have to occur? It's a grim parade of fate at the moment, mocking the English cricket team. So there was that. The other little one for me was what you just mentioned before about Cameron Green making 33 but not hitting a boundary. I liked that from the guy who whacked about four sixes against India when he was teeing off at the end of a declaration innings last summer, just saying, you know what, middle overs of an ODI, I'm just going to milk it, just work it around. Peter Hanscombe in about over 38 to 42 before starting to go up the gears. Just keep shuffling ones and twos around the field.
Yeah, it served its purpose, I think. That extra, I don't know, half an hour, 40 minutes, at times we're like, do they really need to be batting right now? We might look back in a month and say, aha, that's what it was all about. It was like a glorified centre wicket practice or a glorified net for Cameron Green. Just to have a red inker of 33 runs when he'd only had two runs in the series and been bowled twice. That'll be just something for him to take away from this, in addition to bowling superbly, by the way, but something else he can take to Melbourne.
This has been the Ashes Daily from The Final Word, Jeff Lemon and Adam Collins. You can find us at patreon.com/thefinalword if you want to help us out or join in our weird cricket quiz podcasts that come out at other times. We'll be back for day five. As much of it as there is, there may be 10 overs, there may be 100 overs. We don't know. That's the beauty of Test cricket. Tune in and find out what happened on day/possibly night 5 on the Ashes Daily.
Good night. I had to go about it, write it out and find it myself. And there's some
stories I can tell you. I had to fail. That's it for today. Thanks from Adam, Jeff and me for listening. We will see you back here for the final day's play tomorrow. And if you like this episode, don't forget to leave us a rating or a review, which will help more people to find it. This episode was produced by Sophia Tarrick, and The Final Word is produced by Bad Producer Productions and edited by James Hurley. The executive producers are Gabrielle Jackson and Melanie Tate.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Brought to you by Lexus. Some things do more than their stated functions, because exceptional things inspire you to do exceptional things. To this select list, we add the all-new Lexus GX. With its exceptional capability, you'll see possibilities you never knew existed, sending you far outside your comfort zone. but as much as the GX challenges you, it also spoils you. Its intuitive technology and luxurious features mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to it. The all-new Lexus GX.